to David's momentous victory in the Valley of Elah, whenever he was confronted there with Goliath the giant. And as we come into this chapter 18, you may remember some of the details from the last time. We said that among those who should have been great encouragers of David, there were two men who stood out. There was his brother, who was very obnoxious and jealous of him. And then there was Saul. And Saul's resentment for David from this time on seems to gather momentum and goes from being a bit dubious regarding David's ability to go out and confront the giant to wishing to murder him and indeed attempting to do that as well. Now in this age, speaking here of the age that we live in, it's an age of hero worship, we know that. We see all the young fellas and young girls, and we're always very concerned when we see young fellas, especially with boy bands, logos and so on their t-shirt. But anyway, there seems to be that kind of hero worship today, and man is magnified on every hand. And we see even here there was a danger. It says there in verse 7 that, and the women answered and one to another, as they fled and said, Saul has slain the thousands and David his 10,000s. Now we know that this displeased Saul even more. He was so petty at this stage, and this got under his skin and made him resent not only the singers, but it says in the word there from verse 9 that Saul eyed David from that day and forward. He was a marked man. He had it in for him, as we would say. And he would take his chances at trying to get rid of him. But what a contrast there is here. We know that the people appreciated what David had done, but you take the situation at the Red Sea, where a far more outstanding work had been witnessed, and then you have Miriam there. She was not in any way praising Moses. No, none of the people were. But she said to the other girls with her, sing ye unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord was given his true place. So there were difficulties here, even among those who did appreciate what David had done. That is, when it comes to giving the Lord his true place. Victory must always, brethren and sisters, be ascribed to him and to no one else. Now Jonathan really enters the story here. And Jonathan seemed to have got the balance right. There's no question that he had appreciated and had witnessed what God had done and was ready to ascribe to God the glory and the honour due to his name. Yet he had a great deal of time for David. He saw David as someone that he would want to be form a very true friendship with. And it is to that I want to draw your attention today. Jonathan the friend, that really is the title. Our friendship's important to us all. Cicero, who was one of the foremost Roman philosophers many, many years ago, he certainly wouldn't agree with everything that he said. But some of the quotes that he came out with have been recorded and are still repeated to this day. He said this, friendship is the only thing in the world concerning the usefulness of which all mankind are agreed. And so it is. Friendship is so important. And always people have esteemed friendship, they have treasured it. And true friendship enriches your life. And it enriches my life as well. And perhaps for most of us, when we look down through the years of our past experience, occasionally we've come across friendships that turned out not to be real. And maybe when I look at my heart, Debbie and I haven't always been as good a friend as I should have been either. And friendships over the years as well, they have seemed to, they melted away for no good reason. Some were destroyed perhaps because of selfishness in such as life. But friendship is important to us, and that does not lessen the fact that most people really appreciate friendship. Appreciate friendship. And I want to look at this, what seems to almost to be like an outstanding friendship here, as we consider Jonathan the friend. I think you probably will look at this chapter two times, because there's another, and we said in the sequel to it, there's Jonathan's friendship, but there is within him that is evident with Saul, and there's some things about that that I would like to look at and meditate that with you next week. But we're looking here, first of all, today, at Jonathan the friend. I want you to notice, first of all, the grounds of friendship. The grounds of friendship. Why would you want to be friends with someone? Well, we all know that whenever an individual comes into money, we call it that, whether it is winning the lottery or some large inheritance, whatever the case may be, it is an unfortunate fact of life that they will attract people. And there will be those who you could call Klingons, and they're there for a lifestyle, or there for what they can get, whether it is recognition generally or some other thing that they want. But it isn't true friendship. True friendship has nothing to do with what you or I do or do not have. That is not true friendship. The story of Jonathan and David stands out because the grounds of this true, worthwhile friendship. It says there that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. He saw the great value of making this man a true friend. He realized it would be beneficial for himself, but Jonathan, being the way he was, he knew that David needed this friendship. Now put yourself where David is just at the moment. He's just come in from the sheepfold not very long ago. He killed the giant, and Saul is starting to hit him. And Jonathan knows his father probably better than anyone else. And he knows that David is going to need a friend. And this friendship, it says, knit together, this friendship, the grounds for this friendship, number one, was respect. Or the love that is mentioned here really refers to respect. It was founded upon respect. Now, Jonathan, just a few chapters ago, had displayed a bit of courage himself. He was an honest man. He had integrity. He was also a very courageous man. And now he greatly respected this shepherd boy. Sometimes you hear the saying, people love an underdog. Well, David really was that. Because not only had he to take on Goliath, but he had a great struggle to even get to the forefront of the battle. We mentioned that on other occasions with his brother Eliab, and with his father even saying, oh, he just banged the sheep. And Eliab saying, I know who you were. What about the sheep? Who have you left him with? He was seeking to undermine him and to make a little of him, and was showing no respect for him. But now Jonathan, the prince in waiting, king in waiting at that time, he respected this shepherd boy greatly. You see, David was someone who displayed modesty and piety and courage. And that's really all of this time. Modesty and piety and courage. You see, Jonathan himself had a good heart. He had a good heart. And he respected David, and David respected him. And therefore, here was a friendship that was built on mutual respect. And we all remind ourselves today, not just the young people, but certainly the young people as well. Friendships, true friendship, the ground of them is mutual respect. Whether it is in our social circle, I know of someone who was brought up, and maybe many, but I'm just thinking of one, brought up in a Christian home, mom and dad were saved and sought to do the best they could. And that person, God, developed the wrong friendship. And that friendship really messed up their life. The friendship to start with seemed to be good enough, but over the next months, and longer than that, it proved to be a disaster. I'm not telling you what to do, young people, but you need to choose your friends well. When I was in year one at Kilbeganean Junior High School, in room one, I remember seeing a sign on the wall that had been put there, the different signs, and one of them said this, and I didn't agree with it all, but I agreed with some of it. It said, friends should be few. Friends like books should be few and well chosen. The bit I don't agree with is a few. I can't see the justification for that, but anyway, friends like books should be few and well chosen. We do not dictate to you what to do, but in your circle of close friends, those that you allow to influence you, David was going to allow Jonathan to guide him in some ways, to advise him on what way Saul was behaving. And David would, even way down the line, in the days of Mephibosheth, David would still remember this friendship with Jonathan and what it meant to him. In your social circle, a wrong friendship can destroy you. It can destroy your reputation. Someone, and I think it's a Northern Irish proverb, said, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. We want to be very careful that our friendship, the branch of our friendship, is mutually respect. But then you have even the situation regarding marriage, of course. You may see a beautiful girl, you think, well, there's a good wife. Well, how do you know that? Or some really handsome fella, and you think, well, there's just who I met, he's a pop star or something. You think, well, how I'd love to marry him. Why? Needs to be a lot more to it than that. And you see, marriage, there needs to be that mutual respect. In fact, concerning us men, it says we are to love our wives as our own selves. And I know that young people think, well, here we go again. There's an older person, he's been married for years, and he's telling us what to do. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just saying be very careful. There's a woman I knew, who told me of a young woman. And she was engaged to be married to this handsome fella, a very good-looking girl, to be married to this handsome fella. And the girls were into training and so on, and they were out at the gym, and the swimming pool and so on. And they were in the ladies' changing room, and they were getting changed. And one girl noticed on this girl that was getting married, she noticed bruises that no one else could see. And she said to her, she says, what's that? She says, oh, that's nothing. She says, no, it's not nothing. Those are knuckle marks. And then she said, well, it says it's just, when she named her boyfriend, she says it's just an emotional thing he has. It's just, it says, when we get married, it'll be okay when we get married. I know it will. And our friend said, you're going to tell someone else about this, someone that can maybe help you? She says, no, and that's just what I am. And she went and told a certain person, not her mother or father, but a certain person who came and talked to her, and she wouldn't listen. She wouldn't listen. She thought, oh, when we get married, it'll be all so much better, and there'll be no more less, and all that. There was no time until you are battered black and blue, and the whole thing is over. So be very, very careful. Our marriage is to be built upon mutual respect. Social circle, mutual respect. Christians generally, mutual respect for each other. And it's all about me. Say, for instance, we meet someone who's quite an outgoing Christian, maybe a very outgoing Christian, and then someone who's really quiet and very, very shy, they can still be very good friends, because there is that mutual respect for each other. What about other people? I was reading over what it says in Romans chapter 15 and verse 2, even regarding our neighbours. Romans 15 and verse 2, it says, let every one of us please his neighbour for his good to edification. It's good to get on well with our neighbours as best we can, to live at peace with all men as far as lies within us. But whenever we think of the grounds of friendship, what's our friendship built upon? Surely it's not upon what we can get from someone, or just because we feel that we need to have a person there for us, but it's built upon mutual respect. And friendships that are built upon mutual respect, they will last. And they will be useful to both the people, both parties in that friendship. But there's not only respect here, there is providence. It was in God's providence that David came to a situation here where there was a young man like Jonathan. Someone who was willing to look beyond himself. Someone who was willing to genuinely care for someone else in a most remarkable way. It says here in the space of just two or three verses that he loved him as his own soul. He saw integrity, and he said, this is what I want to do the very best I can to help. And that was good. And in God's providence, he was there. And the God in his providence, and again, some of you are very young, may take you anywhere in this world. I don't know where. As far as education or employment or marriage or anything else, who knows what the years ahead will hold for you. But always be looking for the Lord. To the Lord, that in his providence, so many people have said to me, I think it's the Lord's will, and
I didn't want to get into an argument or start a row, but I really didn't want to say, look, can you see you've come to me and said this, can you show me that? He said, who? The Lord's will, the mind was made up, and then you read through the Bible, you find a verse that suits the situation, think, oh, it's the Lord's will. No, it's not. Look to the Lord continually, and make sure you have his guidance as far as lies within you. And then in his providence, he can position you in the right place, that there will be someone there for you. The worst thing in the world is, well, not the worst thing in the world, but one of the awful things in life is loneliness. Loneliness and not having a true friend. Remember Joseph. And I'm thinking here even beyond the bounds of Christian friends, because in real life, we have friends that are not Christians. Some of them have proved themselves to be among the very best friends you could possibly have. And that's not a strange thing to say now. God gave Joseph favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison in Genesis 39. God gave him favor with him. He would have done anything for him. Give him a tremendous position of authority there at that time. Remember Israel. God gave Israel favor in the eyes of the Egyptians who abused them. But in the circumstances, that was what was required in Exodus 3, and the Lord gave them favor there. You could think of Esther and how she found favor with Ahasuerus. And so on and so forth, and we can go on. In other words, some unsaved people have shown great kindness and friendship to Christians. I'm not exaggerating here, because there's one of our churches, if I'm not wrong in saying that the center it's built upon was provided by Roman Catholic, the Bible Church. You see, there's a lot of things that are not strictly black and white. We know that we seek friendship with Christians, not with the world, but that is the system. It is a system. You have unsaved loved ones. You love them dearly. They do anything for you, some of them. And you would do it for them. And there's no reason why you shouldn't have that close friendship with people like that. It's the system of the world that is the problem. Hostile world. In that hostile world, God can provide someone for us. Raise up someone who will help us when that help is required. And they will have that mutual respect. And God in his providence has brought that situation about. You see, what we're really saying to you is today, folks, that God knew all about David. He knew what he needed emotionally and mentally, as well as what he needed materially and physically. And he knows all about you. He knows about, again, young people, and this may be something to speak about, young people's making something. He knows about your aspirations. There's nothing wrong with being ambitious, as long as it ambition doesn't take over your life and block the Lord out. But he can meet your need wherever you are, and you can be of great help to someone. Or someone can be of great help as a friend to you. Someone contacted me some time ago now, and I have to say that I felt greatly honored. They asked me regarding a very private and a very, very important situation that concerned them. And I actually said to them, I said, I feel very honored that you felt you could lift the phone and contact me. And they said two things to me. Well, one thing really that stood out, they said, I know you'd be a confidential friend. I know you'd be a confidential friend. And folks, true friendship, the grounds of this friendship, I know that some perverted people with warped thinking will try and tell us this was an illicit relationship here between David and John. There's nothing of the sort. And we know here is a relationship that is built upon mutual respect and God's providence. And when you look out in the world, you think, oh, so-and-so's got favor. But is it really friendship? Is it favoritism? Or is it partiality because of what they are, because of their personality, or because of something? Is it really true friendship? Because I want to move on here. There's not only the grounds of friendship, that is mutual respect and God's providence, but there is the giving of friendship. Someone rightly said, I don't think it was Cicero, but they said that you can give without loving, but you can't love without giving. If you love, gives. Love gives. True friendship is not selfish. Now, Jonathan here was in line to be the king. He was Saul's son. And he never stopped loving his father. We don't believe that he ever stopped loving his father. But if you look there in verse 3, it says, and Jonathan and David
made a covenant. And after time and moment, I'll turn to John chapter 20 with you, because he loved him as his own soul. In actual fact, when you read about Jonathan's view of David here, Jonathan is very willingly giving up the position that lies ahead of him. David's anointed. Saul doesn't care. As we said a few weeks ago, David had to tolerate Saul for quite a long time before he actually was on the throne. Jonathan never stopped loving his father, but he would not, and this is important, he would not condone wrong. He wouldn't condone it. Saul was wrong. Jonathan knew him better than anyone else. Not only would he not condone wrong, but he would not follow wrong. And folks, you and I, when we really like our friends, we may feel, well, they're my friend and I think I should be on their side. True friendship wants the best for their friends. And sometimes the very best thing that I can say, if they're in error, supposing one of our friends falls into sin, is to point it out to them. To say, well, I'm your friend. And I've been speaking to young people fairly recently, and they have shown remarkable friendship. Remarkable friendship to other people. People who, on a human level, didn't really deserve the friendship anymore. And that's the truth. But they've shown remarkable friendship in the giving of friendship. I just want to put a strain on Jonathan's relationship with his father. It's never very easy when it's as close to home as that to do the right thing. Jonathan here, he was really giving of his position very willingly in order that David could have it. You look over there quickly in chapter 20, I just read what it says there. Here's part of this great covenant between David and Jonathan, is in verse 15 of chapter 20. But also thou shalt not put off thy kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord hath put off the enemies of David. He referred to his own family. Every one from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require at the hand of David's enemy. And Jonathan caused David to swear again, because he loved him. For he loved him as he loved his own soul. Now, you know the story, some years down the line of Mephibosheth. Jonathan's dead by this time. Mephibosheth is crippled, and you know the story how David sent for him. It was the knowledge of the house of Saul that he could show the kindness of God unto him. Jonathan didn't forget, or David didn't forget this covenant, this friendship. This was very, very important, and this was showing really stability. It was showing friendship that is willing to give. Friendship that gives. Maybe you would look over from me there, please, in 2 Chronicles just now. 2 Chronicles chapter 16. Again, it's the context of Asa. And if you read it yourself, I will not take time to go through it all, because we've had that time this morning. Asa's been looking for help. It says in verse 4 of chapter 16 in 2 Chronicles, and Ben-Hadad hearkened unto King Asa, and sent the captains of his armies against the cities of Israel, and they smote Ion and Dan and Abel-Mehem and all the store cities of Naphtali. And it came to pass, when Baasha heard it, that he left off building of Ramah and let his work cease. And he said, the king took all Judah and the carried away the stones of Ramah, the timber thereof, wherewith Baasha was building. And he built therewith Geba and Mizpah. And at the time, Hanani the seer came into Asa, king of Judah, and said unto him, because thou hast relied on the king of Syria, and not relied on the Lord thy God, therefore is a host of the kingdom of Syria escaped out of thine hand. What happened here? Asa needed a friend. He needed someone to be on his side. And he has seeming success, because Ben-Hadad is a great commander, but the host of the kingdom of Syria has escaped. And Asa is so taken up with this friendship that he hardly noticed this important detail. And folks, therefore, we need to be very careful again with our friends and with ourselves, that our friendship is built on respect, mutual respect, and it's the providence of God perhaps, and that it is a friendship that gives for the right reasons. Gives for the right reasons. Ben-Hadad giving up here for his own benefit. Asa was losing out with the Lord at this time, and his thinking wasn't what it used to be, as far as clarity was concerned and discernment was concerned. He had a heavy place. He slid away from the Lord and became really hard on other believers. You can see that on down through the chapter, put some of them in prison and so on, and oppressed them. He got it all wrong, in other words. Friendship, this friendship was a giving friendship. Jonathan was willingly giving up the throne. And we want to move on speaking about that still. Jonathan also, it says there, he gave his clothes. And we could read through that without thinking perhaps there was any significance. It says in verse 4, and Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments. You see, the clothes at that time signify the person and his position. So he's really, as we said, renouncing his position here. He's really transferring it over to David. Now, this was an act of faith. David wasn't on the throne. He was going about it, saw his back and Paul playing music for him. Then he made him captain over the army, and people favoured him there as well. But this act on behalf of Jonathan, this was an act of faith that one day it would all pay off, because David would be king. And you see, only faith makes us willing to be less. This world says to you, you've got to be more. You've got to be the one that stands out. You've got to be the one that gets noticed. You've got to be the one that gets more than the other girl or the other fella. You have to be like that. But faith makes us willing to be less. Many of the people who are on the mission field of the world today, not only in our own denomination, but in other places, are quite ordinary people. But some of them give up huge amounts just to go and serve the Lord. Stuck in the jungle somewhere. Hardly anyone willing to listen to them, battling sickness and discouragement and all of that, and give up huge amounts of property and money in order that they could go and serve the Lord. That's faith. You see, only faith makes us willing to be less. And if your circumstances, young person tonight, come about that you can either have more and dishonour the Lord, or less and honour the Lord, that's the way you need to go. Take the longer view. Go in faith. Feeling that the Lord has some better thing for you. And that's what Jonathan was doing. I'm sure it was hard for him. Saul probably thought, well, this is Jonathan, my son. One day he will be the king. He thought a lot of Jonathan. Jonathan, I take the clothes, and he said, here, David. You take those clothes. There's also the weapons there in verse 4. It says, his garments, even his sword and his bow, and to his girdle. Now, this very sword Jonathan had used to great effect in other exploits that he'd been involved in. But he esteemed friendship with David greater than the worldly crown. That's what we're saying. And you know something? There's a great message there for us all. The Lord Jesus Christ is our friend. He is the giving friend. He is the greatest friend. And really, we are robed in his righteousness, just as Jonathan took off his robe and gave it to him. He has given to us his armor, Ephesians chapter 6. We looked at them in the prayer meeting once. And all of those items of Christian armor, every one of them, bring us to him. They're the same weapons that he used whenever he was tempted. And I ask myself today, considering all of this, I remember one time being asked, there's a little school that was about 30 yards from where we lived in Benton Village in Yorkshire, and our boys went there, and remarkably they invited me in to take the assembly, and I thought, well, I go once and I will preach the gospel and I will never be asked back. Nothing wrong, again, lack of faith in my part, and seeing the thing wrong too. I was asked in every quarter for the remainder of the time that we lived there. And one time I was in, and I can't remember if the headmaster had asked me to or why I decided to speak on friendship. And I spoke about the gracious friend, and that was Jonathan. I spoke about the generous friend, and that was Abraham, when he said to Lot, you take whatever little land you want, and I go the other way. The gracious friend and the generous friend, and then got to the greatest friend and brought the gospel in there, and that was Christ. The one who gave us all for us. And I asked myself the question today, what do I really give him? Do I give him out of my abundance, or do I give him sacrificially, as far as my time and any talents I have in my hand are concerned? You see, the word gets him. We mentioned to you the eye of man, and
there are faithful witnesses around there, I know that. And by the way, they are diminishing in number. Just not very long ago, within months ago, the last Brethren Hall closed in the Isle of Man. Two people that were going to come to the wee work in Port Ireland and Drapers Beamer, but the last Brethren Hall closed. And the other ones, the numbers are small. But you know, generally speaking, people give Christ. And we would want to demonstrate our love for him. He has said that he is our friend. And I have to ask myself the question, how good a friend am I? He's a giving friend. For he gives us all for us, and if you're not converted today, he gives his life that you might be saved. Would you not give your life back to him? This friendship that we're looking at here, the grounds of it was mutual respect and the problems of God. It's evident here that Jonathan, that this was a giving friendship, and David remembered it years down the line. And he took Mephibosheth then, and he set him at the table, and he looked after him like his own son. He remembered the friendship, the covenant. But there also is the guarding of this friendship. If you look at the relationship here with David and Saul, it deteriorated. I can't understand why, and I know that very few people can understand, when Saul, on two occasions, threw a javelin at David, why David didn't seem to get the message. But he kept on serving him. And where my church had come into the wall with it, you and me know it, we know what we would have done. But he didn't seem to do that. He didn't seem to notice that. Saul envied him so much, but Jonathan never envied David. When all the limelight, if you want to call it that, any that would have been on Jonathan, remember, he was one of their top men before David came along. He didn't confront Goliath, but he was one of their top men. One of their most brightest young soldiers. But whenever he was in the shadows now, and David got all of the limelight, Jonathan never envied him. I read the other day, envy doesn't take any holidays. Envy doesn't take any holidays. And perhaps in this world today, envy is one thing that destroys more friendships and many other things. Envy. Not recognizing that the Lord gives to one that what he sees fit and gives to another as he sees fit. Envy is an awful thing, folks. And if someone else is more used of the Lord, or seems to be more used, we should rejoice in that. Or if someone seems to be promoted by the Lord, as we see it, to a different position, we should be rejoicing in that. Jonathan never envied David, and that was part of the guarding of this friendship. But Jonathan obviously was not a glory seeker. Remember the prodigal brother? He had everything. The prodigal's father, whenever the prodigal came home, said to him, you know, towards the end of that story, son, all that I have is yours. And you're always with me. That's all yours. He said, but he's got, you provide for him, he's having this party with his friends. He's having all of this. The prodigal's father was absolutely eaten up with envy and was seeking glory for himself. He couldn't divine his brother's treatment. That's a recipe for disaster. Now, if your good friend gets like that towards you, or me, or I get bored like that towards my friend, that friendship's not going to last. It's not going to last. Friendship is sometimes tested, and it was greatly tested during David's experience and that of Jonathan as well. It was characterized by constancy. It says there in the book of Proverbs, a friend loveth at all times. You may not agree with your friend all the time. It's good in a gracious way to be able to say that to him. You don't agree with him. And all, instead of just being yes, man, saying, oh yes, I agree with you, know, even though we don't. You know, if you're true friends, you're able to say, I don't agree with you in that. In a gracious way. What we're really looking at this morning is that true friendship is scarce. It's scarce. Someone said to me the other night, or to my company the other night, that in this world today, it's just a, what can I get? What about me? As long as I'm all right. Let's look after number one. You know, don't worry about anybody else. This friendship was a giving friendship. It was grounded upon mutual respect. It was a friendship as well that endured and lasted. It was a giving friendship. Jonathan was willing to give everything he had. But the great value of friendship, and this is something that encouraged me, Jonathan spoke well of David to help him. He spoke well of him. He spoke well of him to Saul. And no doubt he spoke well of him to others as well. And Jonathan, it says in the word, shows us in the word, he failed not to encourage David's hand in God. And if I can do that, I'm a happy man. If I could be a kind friend that will speak well of people and fail not to encourage them in the Lord, then there's not much better I can do. He saw the value, folks, of better things than worthy honor. He saw the value of better things than pomp. And the value of this friendship was that both men were strengthened through it, and both men had hope. Jonathan had the hope that one day David would not forget the covenant. He didn't. He looked after Mephibosheth. So today, folks, the lesson for us, the very practical one, is let's esteem our friends. Let's go out of our way to be the best friends that we can. Try to win others honourably to our friendship circle as well. And especially let us be true friends to them. The Lord blesses you thoughts, your hearts today.